Tim Challies, he's the Christian blogger. He tells a story about a man, I think he was with his family, he was having breakfast in a local diner, and he noticed a well-dressed looking man at a table nearby, and he said he had a very sharp suit on, and a nicely pressed shirt, and a matching power tie, and his wingtip shoes were sparkling from a recent shine. Every hair was in place, including a perfectly well-groomed moustache. And the man was sitting there alone at a table eating a bagel as he was preparing for a meeting. And it seemed to be obviously a very important meeting that he was going to because he was shuffling through his papers quite nervously. And then he noticed the man got up from the table, he straightened his tie and prepared to leave. But he noticed as the man walked to the door, he had a blob of cream cheese stuck to his moustache. And he was about to go through the door. He was about to head out into the world for what seemed to be a very important meeting. He had a blob of cream cheese stuck to his moustache. And so the man wondered, well, what should I do? Should I tell him? Will anyone tell him? Will he go to this important meeting with all of these executives with a blob of cream cheese stuck to his moustache? Well, we've all done that kind of thing, haven't we? We've all gone out into the world, maybe perhaps not with the cream cheese, but perhaps it's a piece of spinach in your teeth, or you've come to church not realizing that your six-month-old baby has spit up on your suit, or something like that. You know, we've all gone out into those situations oblivious to something which is very obvious to everyone else. Now, in those situations, we're thankful, aren't we, for people who, before we even get out of the door, before we even go out into the world, will say to us, look, you've got shaving foam in your ear, or you've still got the tag hanging out of the back of your trousers. We're so thankful and relieved when they come to us and they let us know. Well, how about in the spiritual realm? How about in the Christian life? How about when it comes to sins and character flaws and spiritual defects that we all have in our lives? Things that we don't always realize, things that we don't always see, but which are very obvious to everyone else. Are we thankful? Do we respond in that same way when someone is willing to come to us and to point out those flaws? How well do we react if somebody loves us enough to come and point out the spiritual cream cheese that we have on the face of our soul, as it were? How well do we react to that? That's what I want us to think about this morning. Now, in a couple of months, God willing, I'm hoping to go to India to speak at a pastor's conference there. And one of the subjects I'll be speaking on is this subject of criticism, how to handle criticism, and particularly for pastors, keeping them in mind, what to do about it, the way to view criticism, how to profit from it, how to respond to it. Those are the kind of things that I want to look at this morning. I'm really preparing ahead for that meeting, but I think these themes, as we go through them this morning, you'll see that these are relevant to all of us, because, well, we all are exposed to criticism in various forms, and we all certainly have defects and flaws and spiritual cream cheese in different areas of our lives. So that's what I want us to do this morning. I'm using some lecture notes that from a lecture that Dr. Beakey gave when I was at seminary a few years ago, and also a book by C.J. Mahaney. He's written on this subject as well, and a few other authors that I've been dipping into this week. I sort of boiled it all down into four main things that you need to think about when it comes to handling criticism. How to receive and process personal criticism. There is inevitability, plausibility, profitability, and then responsibility. What you are to do with it. Inevitability, plausibility, profitability, and responsibility. Firstly, then, let's think about inevitability. When it comes to receiving criticism, there is something inevitable about it. We will all be criticized at some point in our life. It's not so much a matter of if, but when you will be criticized. Sooner or later, probably sooner, you're going to run up against a person who doesn't like what you do and or doesn't like the way that you do it. That kind of thing is inevitable. You can't escape that in all walks of life, especially in the church, especially if you're a leader or a pastor in the church. Dr. Beakey said in the Dutch circles they have a saying, he who stands at the front will get kicked in the rear. And I suppose that's true, isn't it? If you stand up the front in a church or in any organization, if you have a position of high profile or leadership, you need to expect that. There'll always be people who won't like what you do. And that's especially the case for ministers, just by nature of the work. Think about it the kind of work that a pastor is involved in. He is involved, with God's help by His Spirit, in changing people's lives. And people very often don't want to have their lives changed. People can resent someone telling them they need to change their lives. And really, that's what a pastor is there too. He's appointed by God to tell people that there is change needed in their lives. And so they may not always appreciate that. They may not appreciate the one who brings that. So criticism is very much part and parcel of a minister's job. C.J. Mahaney says this: "If you are a pastor, you will be criticized. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but eventually you will feel the sharp sting of critique. Those within your church may criticize you, those who leave the church may criticize you, and even complete strangers may criticize you. The criticism will come from enemies and from friends. Some of the criticism will be true, some of it will be false, and some may be outright malicious lies. But it's coming, if it hasn't already arrived." So there is an inevitability about criticism in life, especially if you're a minister, just because of the nature of the job. But there are other things that can intensify it as well. Sin, for example. We are all sinners, pastors included. We have fallen natures. We have deep-seated corruption in our hearts, which manifests itself in various areas of our lives and the way that we serve the Lord. And so because of that, sometimes very rightly, we will be criticized for the way we do things or the way that we don't do things. So sin is a contributing factor. Also, weakness as well. Human weakness. Human fallibility. You need to factor that in as well. That is, no matter how well-meaning we may be, no matter how well-intentioned we may be, there may be things which, just because of our own weakness, our own lack of ability in certain areas, we just don't do things very well. Yes, we have areas of strength, areas of competence, but we have areas, perhaps many areas, of weakness. And if you are working in an area of weakness for any length of time, it won't be long before the cracks start to appear. And so, as a result, we again shouldn't be surprised if we get criticism. Now, for a pastor, that might be in an area that's very obvious. He has a high-profile position. Could be very obvious. It might be in something like his sermons. C.J. Mahaney says, "A pastor can expect criticism because we often preach below average sermons. After one sermon, a guy asked me, 'So where do you work during the week?'" He says, "My sermon apparently gave him the impression that preaching wasn't my vocation." And I've had similar comments. Not here, you're all far too polite, but in my time, I've had those kind of comments too. But that's another reason, then, why we need to be ready for criticism and we need to expect criticism, pastor or non-pastor. It's because of sin and weakness. What we do, oftentimes we don't do it very well. And whatever we do, it always, always has the taint of our own corruption about it. So that's the first thing, that's inevitability. Let's move on to plausibility. Now, let's stop. Does anyone have any thoughts or comments on what we've said so far? The inevitability of criticism. If not, we can move on to our second point, and that is the plausibility of criticism. Is this justified? What this person is saying, are there any grounds for this criticism? Might it be true? This person has come to me, they say, "I have a blob of cream cheese on my moustache. Do I need to go to the bathroom and check this?" Are they right in what they're saying? There's a couple of things we need to think about here. The first is the source. What type of person or group of people is it who are making the criticism? The source. In fact, actually, before we even get to that, there is a sense in which Christians, especially if you're in Christian leadership or involved in church life and something like that, there is a sense that we all need, just generally speaking, to have a fairly thick skin anyway. Don't be the kind of person who pays too much attention to everything that's said about you. Or don't be fretful, always trying to find out what people might be saying or might not be saying about you. It's better to have something of a thick skin. Spurgeon makes this point in his book, Lectures to My Students. He has a very helpful chapter. It's called The Blind Eye and the Deaf Ear. And it's based on Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 21, where Solomon there says, "Do not take to heart everything people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you." And the margin in the King James says, do not take them to heart, or do not let them weigh with you. So Spurgeon says, don't notice them or act as if you haven't heard them. He says this: "You cannot stop people's tongues, And therefore, the best thing is to stop your own ears and never mind what is spoken. There is a world of idle chit-chat abroad, and he who takes note of it will have enough to do. He will find that even those who live with him are not always singing his praises, and that when he has displeased even his most faithful servants, they have, in the heat of the moment, spoken fierce words which it would have been better for him not to have heard. And so that's the sort of general principle to do with gossip or with words that are spoken out of turn. Broadly speaking, don't take them too much to heart. In fact, you know, if you think about it, you've probably done the same thing yourself at one point in your other. You've spoken out of turn. You've said something about someone which you wish you hadn't said. Spurgeon, just to quote him again, he says, "You too have talked idly and angrily in your day and would even now be in an awkward position if you were called to account for every word that you have spoken, even about your dearest friend." Thus Solomon argued as he closed the passage, "For oftentimes also thine own heart knoweth that thou thyself likewise hast cursed others." So that's a sort of general rule. Don't be oversensitive. Don't be always fretting, wondering what people might be saying about me. Did I hear that right? Are they talking about me? Don't be like that. Dr. Beaker, I remember him saying that, especially for a pastor, it's good to have a thick skin. He said you have to have the hide of a rhinoceros and the heart of a child. So you have to be tender and compassionate, but also you need to have something of a thick skin as well. That's just a general rule. But what if some particular criticism is brought to you, just to go back to our main point? Well, a couple of things you need to think about. Think about the source, first of all. Think about the person this is coming from, or the group of people that have made this complaint. Is it from someone or a group who are perennially criticizing you? People who, no matter what you do, they can always find grounds for complaint. There's always something about what you're doing that they don't like. Michael Hyatt, he's the chairman, the CEO of Thomas Nelson Publishing Company. And he talks about a group of people, he calls them unhealthy trolls. And in fact, he says you can divide up criticism into three types. There's that which will come from true friends. They really do have your best interests at heart. They want to save you from yourself. They don't want you to go into the meeting with the cream cheese stuck on your moustache. They want what's best for you. You've got criticism from true friends. Then also, he talks about honest critics. And they're not malicious. They're not out to destroy you. They're not out to get you. They just don't agree with you. And he says, that's fair enough. You should listen to them too. But there's this third group called the unhealthy trolls. And these are people who have an agenda. These are people who are out to get you. They want to undermine you. They don't like you. They don't like what you do. They want to really wear you down if they can and deplete all of your mental, spiritual, emotional reserves. Now, the Bible has a name for that kind of person. It calls him the quarrelsome man, the one who's always looking for faults, always looking to pick fights and arguments. And so if the criticism you're getting is coming from that type of a person, then generally speaking, don't take it too much to heart. To quote Joel Beakey again, he says, "Don't take every whisper seriously. Don't get sidetracked into fruitless controversy or spend your energy trying to appease or persuade implacable critics, unhealthy trolls, who foster animosity. Remember, a brother offended is harder to win than a strong city, and their contentions are like the bars of a castle." And so you won't win. You can't win with those kind of people. Better for you just to move on and focus your energies on what you have been given to do. If, on the other hand, the criticism is coming from a different type of person, the criticism is coming from a mature believer, maybe a Christian leader, or a respected counselor, someone who, generally speaking, is very supportive of you and usually very encouraging of you, they come to you with a criticism to share, then you need to give that a whole lot more weight. Then you need to treat that a lot more seriously. Now, this is a person who has encouraged me in the past. This is a person who wants what's best for me. These are not unhealthy trolls. These are respected individuals. I need to listen and to think about what it is they've said. So you could say there's a sort of qualitative aspect to this. Consider the nature of the source. But then one other thing, think also about the quantitative aspect as well. How many people have made this criticism about me? Is this something that more than one person has noticed? Is this a criticism that I've had pointed out to me before by somebody else or a number of people? And if that's the case, then I really do need to listen to this. I really do need to examine this in some way. Now, we also need to say, you know, numbers are not everything. Just because a lot of people agree on something doesn't always mean that they're right. biblical examples, the Israelites in the wilderness, when Pharaoh was coming towards them and they began to complain and they said, oh, Moses just brought us out here to die here, we're all going to die, I knew this would happen. You know, en masse, they were all complaining, and yet in the end, they were all wrong. Pilate comes and brings Jesus out before the people. What should we do with him? Crucify him, crucify him. We want Barabbas, we want Barabbas. A large number of very religious people, they were all wrong. So just because you have a large number of people all agree on something doesn't necessarily mean they're right. But generally speaking, if there is more than one person making the criticism and they're reliable, respected people whose judgment you trust, then there's a good chance there is something somewhere in what they're saying. So the lesson then from this point is don't harden your heart to it, don't stiffen your neck to it, don't be a slave to criticism, but at the same time don't be aloof from criticism as well. Or to refer to our illustration at the beginning, if many people are telling you there is cream cheese on your moustache, there's a good chance that there is. So that's our second point, the plausibility of criticism. Let me stop there, see if anybody has any thoughts or comments. Ken? We're going to come to the verses in our next point, but go ahead. Yeah, criticism is very profitable. That's the point we're going to move on to next. There, like you say, Ken, it's not always pleasant, but there is so much we can learn from that, especially when it comes from people that we know and respect. Julian?
Yeah. And I'd like to add what Ken said, what I said in James 1:19. This you know, my beloved brother, what everyone must be quick to hear is love to speak.
It's a great point, yeah. It's a great comment, Julian, yeah. I hadn't got that text down, but that's a good one, yeah. Be slow to speak, be quick to listen, yeah. Brian? That's right, yeah. Sometimes they may not be exactly spot on. They might not have hit the nail exactly on the head, but usually if a lot of people are saying something, there is an area of your life that does need to be looked at there, yeah. Tom? Yeah, thanks, Tom. Yeah, these are all good comments. So there's some scriptures I want us to turn to now just to help us get a better grasp of this. Let me just fire them out. Tom, could you get Proverbs 12:15? Joe, Proverbs 15:32. Glenn, Proverbs 17:10. Tom, over there, Proverbs 19:20. Austin, Proverbs 29:1. Paul, Ecclesiastes 7:5. And Bob, Proverbs 9:8-9. So we're just going to go through these texts. I'm not going to make any comments. We'll just run through them. Tom, he starts off with Proverbs 12:15. So what all of those texts are teaching us is that not only is it foolish not to receive criticism and correction, but also the positive side is there is a lot of profit to be had for us from receiving criticism. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Criticism can be like good medicine, can be very health-giving for the soul. David Polison, he says, "Critics, like governing authorities, are servants of God to you for good. He who sees into the heart uses critics to help us see things in ourselves, outright failings of faith and practice, distorted emphases, blind spots, areas of neglect, attitudes and actions contradictory to stated commitments, and yes, even strengths and significant contributions." So criticism then can be a blessing. If it's given in a helpful way and it's received in with a humble spirit, it can be like good medicine. It can be very profitable. We can be very thankful for criticism. Yeah, I mean, you know that, don't you? Imagine a young man, he's about to go out on his first date, and someone says, "You got spinach there in your teeth. Oh, so thankful you pointed that out to me." Or, you know, the man who goes to the business meeting, and perhaps that man did go over and say, "Look, you've got that big piece of cream cheese stuck in your moustache." That man's going to be so thankful for that. And that's what all of these texts are telling us, that criticism, negative feedback, is good for us. It helps us to face things that perhaps we haven't seen or we haven't been willing to face. Just to give you an example, when I first went to seminary many years ago in London, the seminary that I went to, they didn't have any kind of practice preaching forum. And so the founder of that seminary didn't believe in it. He thought there's something wrong about critiquing a sermon. And so we never did it. And what would happen is there were quite a few of us young men, and we would go out every Sunday and preach in various places. And you'd get many very kindly elderly ladies, especially at the end of the day, would come over and shake you by the hand and say, "That was wonderful. Oh, that was a wonderful sermon. Oh, we've had a wonderful day today." And of course they wanted to encourage you and build you up, and that's marvelous. But after a few months of that, you can get a bit of a distorted opinion of yourself and your own abilities. And then I came to the seminary here in Grand Rapids, and they have practice preaching every week. And then you have to stand in front of all your classmates and all the faculty, very learned, biblically very astute men, who will say, "Actually, no, that wasn't wonderful. Now, what you said there, that was wrong. Why didn't you quote that text? Why didn't you refer to that passage? Why didn't you use an illustration?" You can have half an hour of that. Ouch. Ah. You know, I remember the first one I went to, I came out of that meeting feeling like I had been really worked over. But then afterwards, I would think about what they said, and thought, yeah, you know, maybe they're right. Perhaps I do that, and yeah, I should have said that, really. Yeah, he's right, isn't he, about that? And over time, you can see that this is very helpful. This is a very useful exercise. And criticism does serve that function in our lives. It's a tool that God uses to train us and to promote humility and to promote spiritual growth. And that's very useful, especially for those involved in Christian work, especially for those who are pastors. It could be that they need it more than anyone else. They get more criticism, but maybe they need it more. Richard Baxter, in his book, The Reformed Pastor, he said, this was written for pastors, he said, "Because there are many eyes upon you, therefore there will be many observers of your falls. If other men may sin without observation, so cannot you. And you should thankfully consider how great a mercy this is, that you have so many eyes to watch over you, and so many ready to tell you of your faults, and have so greater helps than others, at least for the restraining of your sin. Though they may do it with a malicious mind, yet you have the advantage by it." And so that's what God does. He gives pastors many eyes to watch over him, and many mouths to speak about him, and even against him. And Baxter, who probably experienced a lot of this himself, he said that's actually quite helpful. That can be very useful for maintaining humility and fidelity, those kind of things. It's not pleasant. It's not the nicest tasting medicine, but you know this, don't you? It's true, isn't it? Criticism can have very positive sanctifying effects. We tend generally to remember more that we have learned from our criticism than we do from any encouragement that we've had. It can have that positive effect. I mentioned this man, David Polison. He is a Christian author. He's a seminary professor at Westminster West, I think. But he talks about a point in his life when there was a man who was publishing criticism about him and about his ministry. And he said that he just became totally absorbed with this and preoccupied. He couldn't get it out of his head, you know, what this man was doing to him and why this other man was supposed to be a Christian. Why would he want to do something like this? And it just took over his whole life. But he said also at the same time he could see that the Lord was using it to bring to light certain idols that he did have in his own heart. The love of praise, the love of esteem, the desire to be highly thought of by others. All of these things, he said, did start to come to light. And so I think that's the way that we need to see it. We need to approach personal criticism in that way. To see this as a God-ordained instrument. It's a tool. It's a very sharp tool. It's a very painful tool. But it's one that does actually bring about good in our lives. Usually it will bring to an area, as Brian said. It will touch upon an area, may not exactly be spot on, but it will be dealing with something in your life that needs to be addressed. John Newton, he wrote this in a letter to a friend who had been experiencing criticism. He says, "The Lord abhors pride and self-importance. The seeds of these evils are in the hearts of his own children. But rather than suffer that which he hates to remain in those he loves, he will in mercy pound them as mortar to beat it out of them or to prevent its growth." And I'm sure many of you here, you've known that. Perhaps you've had conflict, criticism from a certain person. It was very wearing. Oh, it really did grind you down. But you know the truth of Newton's words, that the Lord was using that in your life to really grind, like the pestle and mortar, to grind that pride out of your heart. And so that's what we need to keep in our minds. There is pain in it for us. There is. It's painful, but it's also profitable. Hurts, but it's helpful as well. And that's why the Bible teaches us that the wise man, the truly wise man, he loves correction. We cited it, Proverbs 9, verse 8. "Do not reprove a scoffer, he will hate you. Reprove a wise man, and he will love you." Scoffer hates criticism. The scoffer resents it, he rejects it, he resents the one who brings it. But the wise man, not only does he appreciate the criticism he's receiving, but also he will appreciate and he'll love the one who brings it to him. In fact, that's really the difference in the Bible between the wise and the foolish man. The foolish man, he needs correction, but he won't receive it. The wise man needs less correction, and yet he is willing to embrace it, and the one who brings it to him. Why does he do that? Well, it's because he knows that his correction will actually lead to him gaining more wisdom. He'll get more wisdom about himself and how to improve himself. So he knows he will be better by this correction. And so that's why he can receive very positively even things said about him which are very negative. Because he knows ultimately it's for his good. And that's profit. That is a blessing. "Let a righteous man strike me, it is a kindness. Let him rebuke me, it is oil for my head. Let my head not refuse it." So yes, criticism hurts. Does it? Stings. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. It's a wound, nevertheless, isn't it? It's still a wound. Wound leaves a mark. A wound leaves a bruise. But if it's given for our spiritual good, then it's a kindness. And it is doing us good, and so it's a kindness. And so the lesson then is don't always react immediately so negatively to criticism. Don't always cast your critic in a negative light. Dr. Beakey would say some of our best friends are those who differ from us because they can save you from yourself and lead you to greater dependence on God. Spurgeon says, "A sensible friend who will unsparingly criticize you from week to week will be a far greater blessing to you than 1,000 undiscriminating admirers if you have sense enough to bear his treatment and grace enough to be thankful for it." In fact, Spurgeon, there was a point in his life when it was in the early days, he was preaching in Surrey Gardens Music Hall, and while he was preaching there every week, there was an anonymous man who every week would send him a letter giving him a list of all the errors, all the mispronunciations, the slip-ups that he might have made. And Spurgeon said of him, "He never signed his name, and that was only my only cause of complaint against him, for he left me in a debt which I could not acknowledge. I take this opportunity of confessing my obligations to him, for with genial temper and an evident desire to benefit me, he marked down most relentlessly everything which he supposed me to have said incorrectly. Concerning some of these corrections, he was in error himself, but for the most part he was right, and his remarks enabled me to perceive and avoid many mistakes. I looked for his weekly memoranda with much interest, and I trust I am all the better for them. If I had repeated a sentence two or three Sundays before, he would say, "See same expression in such and such sermon," mentioning number and page. He remarked on one occasion that I too often quoted the line, "Nothing in my hands I bring," and he added, "We are sufficiently informed of the vacuity of your hands." So on and so on. Possibly, Spurgeon says, some young men might have been discouraged, if not irritated, by such severe criticisms, but they would have been very foolish, for in resenting such correction, they would have been throwing away a valuable aid to progress. No money can purchase outspoken, honest judgment, and when we get it for nothing, let us utilize it to the fullest extent. So, there is profit for us then in criticism. Let me stop there, see if anybody has any thoughts or comments. Bob.
The Bible paints a picture, a beautiful picture, when it says, iron sharpens iron. Very hard materials, when you strike them against each other, sparks can fly.
Oh, yeah.
So one man sharpens another.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's a great text too, isn't it? Yeah, it's not an easy process. It's abrasive, but it's one that is profitable for sharpening us. Yeah, Joe.
It stuck out to me there the part of Spurgeon's quote where you receive this criticism for free for a benefit. How often we go to self improvement seminars and self improvement books, spending all this money, and then we have this bad attitude or poor response to the criticism that we get for free.
Yeah, there's lessons for us all around, isn't there? Criticisms that we can get for free. Yeah. John?
We see a larger principle, which is basically accountability. Kind of a larger principle here. I mean, Jesus sending out the disciples always, two by two. Yeah. Appoint elders in every city. This plurality, accountability, how good that is, how needful that is, because of our flaws, because of our how often we might go off on one thing. This man that's beside you, gives you this counter measure.
Yeah.
Just a beautiful need that we have that God supplies, and we must embrace it.
That's right. Yeah. Part of the framework that God puts into our lives to sanctify us and keep us on the right path. That's good. Yeah, these are good comments. Okay, let's move on to our final point. This is the responsibility, what we're to do with criticism. And there are four things that I want us to think about here: prayer, peace, perseverance, and perspective. Firstly, prayer. That's the first thing. Remember Dr. Beakey saying that whenever he gets negative criticism, he doesn't do anything with regard to that for 24 hours. That gives him time to maybe talk with his wife, perhaps talk to one or two trusted counselors, run it by them. But also prayer allows him time to pray over what's been said, to examine himself in the light of what's been said. Search me, O Lord, try me, see if there be any evil way in me. Bring the criticism before the Lord in prayer and examine yourself in the light of what's been said. Also, pray for the critic as well. Newton said that in one of his letters. As to your opponent, I wish that before you set pen to paper against him, and during the whole time you are preparing your answer, you may commend him by earnest prayer to the Lord's teaching and blessing. This practice will have a direct tendency to conciliate your heart to love and pity him. And so that's the first thing to do then. Before you even respond, pray. Pray, ask the Lord to show you if there's any truth in these things, and then pray for your critic and pray for how you will respond to him. Prayer, first thing. Secondly, peace. We are, aren't we? The Bible says we're as much as depends on us to live at peace with others. And that goes especially towards our critics as well. We should seek peace with them. And so it's good to get to know them. Joel Beakey says it's hard to love a person if you don't know them very well. So go out of your way. Spend time with that person. Find out what they think and the way they think. Really make an effort to see them. In fact, he says that there was a man in his congregation who made a sort of a quip about him. He said, if you really want to get our minister's attention, the way to do it is to become his enemy. Because then he'll really go out of his way to get to know you and spend time with you. And I don't know if that's true, but it's a good principle, isn't it? Seek to get to know your critic better. Assure them that your desire is to learn from them. Like Bob said, the iron sharpening iron. And be teachable in that encounter with them. I'm quoting from Joel Beakey here. He says, it's important when engaging with criticism to be reflective in our listening, clarifying and repeating as you go along. So you're saying, am I right? Is this what you're saying? This kind of thing. And then when you've been through it, the importance of saying, if necessary, at the end, well, I'm sorry. I was wrong. Will you forgive me? Those words can be powerfully disarming. He says here, it's amazing how determined people are to forgive their minister when he is willing to say sorry. So interact with them in this way. Pray again. Pray with your critic as well. Don't pray against him when you're praying. Pray with your critic and bring these things to the Lord in prayer. And if necessary, confess things that you've done wrong, things that need forgiveness. But he says, be specific as possible. Pray with integrity and humility. And so, you know, when we approach our critic in that way, with grace, with humility, that person can very often be won round. Just to quote Spurgeon again, he who in your early days hardly thinks you fit for the pastorate may yet become your firmest defender. He sees that you grow in grace and advance in qualification for the work if you show a gracious, humble disposition. It's possible for the critic to be won over. So there's peace. Perseverance as well. That's important. Don't give up in the face of criticism. Keep pressing on. You need to keep role models in the forefront of your mind. You need to think about Christ first of all. Think about his perseverance. Think about the hatred, the enmity that he faced all his life. Consider him, the writer of the Hebrews says, who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. So think about Christ and all the opposition, all the hatred that he had to face. He was scourged and he was spat upon, he was crucified, he was sinlessly perfect. Do you really think that you're going to make it through life without any opposition, without any criticism? Think of him. Think of his power. Think of his faithfulness. How he's been with you through so many trials before. He stood beside you. He helped you in the past. He'll help you in present criticism. So think of him. Think of other great saints in the Bible who have persevered. The Apostle Paul. So many trials, so many hardships, so many difficulties. Nehemiah. Building the wall, the criticisms that he faced, Sanballat and his colleagues, they were a constant thorn in his side. Criticisms that they directed at Nehemiah and the workers, some of which wasn't always that far off the mark. Some of the workers weren't that good at what they were doing, and some of them weren't that committed to what they were doing, and there were sections of the wall that weren't very strong. So what did Nehemiah do? Did he give up? Did he just throw in the towel or the trowel? No, he committed himself to God in prayer. He then reviewed and revised his plans. He put guards on the walls, but basically he carried on. And that's a good strategy. Pray, review and revise if necessary, but just keep going. Don't give up. Let criticism improve your project. Don't let it impede your project. There's an example given of Abraham Lincoln. He was one of your most respected presidents, but also at one time also one of the most reviled as well. He had thousands and thousands of people opposed him for his views on war and slavery and the way to unify the country. Now, one time there was such a crescendo of criticism against him, one of his friends pulled him aside and he said, it's as if you're surrounded by scores and scores of barking dogs. And then Lincoln replied to them, he said, you know that during the time of the full moon, the dogs bark and bark at the moon as long as it's clearly visible in the sky. And his friends were sort of a bit puzzled by that and said, yeah, what's the rest of the story? And he said, well, there's nothing more to tell. The moon just keeps on shining. And what he meant was that he believed that what he was doing was right, that his policies were for the good, and they would unify the country, and so he was just going to keep going. And so that's a principle to keep in mind as well. Even though you may be surrounded by many people criticizing you for what they do, barking dogs as it were, if what you're doing is right, you believe what you're doing is right in the sight of the Lord, then keep going. Joel Beakey says, don't allow a few critics to force you into their molds so that you live timid and hesitant lives, doing nothing, saying nothing, and worst of all, being nothing. Don't lose heart and don't give up. So there's perseverance, and then also finally we could say perspective as well. You need to keep an eternal perspective. You need to keep the big picture in mind. Soon there will be no more time for work. Soon our work will be done. And then we will be in the presence of the Lord. And then he's going to wipe away every tear. And there's going to be no more sorrow. And then we are going to be with him in perfect fellowship with the Lord Jesus and with God the Father and with all of God's people. There's going to be no more arguments. There's going to be no more controversies, no more divisions, no more theological contentions. Our critics, if they are believers, they will embrace us and we will embrace them. And we will be able to look at the tapestry of our lives. You know, you turn over the tapestry and you can see all that God was doing in your life, and you'll see that those criticisms that you received, which were just so painful and which hurt and wounded you so deeply at the time, you'll see how God really was using those things to prepare you, to sanctify you, to make you ready for heaven. And so keep that perspective in your mind. Press on, look to Christ, trust in his word. These are things that will enable us to persevere in the midst of criticism. Just to quote Joel Beakey one more time, he says, "Stop your worldly complaining. Count your blessings. Persevere in the good fight of faith. You have the best of assurance in the fight, the promise of God. You have the best of advocates, the Holy Spirit. The best of generals, the Lord Jesus Christ. And the best of results, everlasting glory." And so, don't give up. In spite of criticisms, press on. Think about, just finally, think about someone like John Calvin. You know, he was a man who was so greatly used for the spread of the Reformation across Geneva and across Europe. A wonderful preacher and theologian. Surely people just hung on his every word, didn't they? Well, some did, but he also had a lot of critics. Many people in that city of Geneva, they would come by his house, they would curse him through his open window. They would name their dogs after him. Sometimes they would come with their guns and fire off rounds right beside his house to wake him up in the middle of the night. He once said, at the end of his life, he said this to a gathering of pastors, "I have lived here amid continual bickerings. I have been, from derision, saluted of an evening before my door with 40 or 50 shots of an arquebus." That's a large muzzle-loaded rifle, which when you fire it makes an enormous boom and a huge pall of smoke goes up. He had 40 to 50 of those sounded outside his house on regular occasions to wake him up during the night. And yet he carried on, preaching 7 or 8 times a week. And what was the effect? John Knox said his church was the most perfect school of Christ on earth. He sent out preachers to take the Reformation to France and well across Europe. And he's left behind tomes and tomes of commentaries and volumes of theology that we still look to and lean upon today. But he had critics, a lot of them. But he persevered, looking to Christ and trusting his word. Isaiah 54 verse 17 says, "No weapon formed against you shall prosper, and every tongue which rises against you in judgment you shall condemn. This is the heritage of the servants of the Lord, and their righteousness is from me." So I hope that's helpful in enabling us to process these criticisms that we may experience in our lives. Sorry, I've gone a little over time. Let's close in prayer. Ray, could you pray for us?